It's time for the Biblical Prophecy Program with your host, Dr. Alan Kirshner of Eschatos Ministries.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Biblical Prophecy Program. So before I begin the program, I want to give a reminder that I currently support my family through this ministry. So if you benefit from this program or other resources at Eschatos Ministries, please consider supporting us by becoming a ministry partner, which is giving on a monthly basis. You can go to alankirshner.com and sign up. And I'll also put a link in the show notes. We have a campaign going on for new Eschatos partners. We're asking for 25 new Eschatos partners for the upcoming year of 2025. And we have someone who is willing to match those partners for the first year. So, 25 new partners. And we only have one at this point, one this week. Graciously has committed to support the ministry. So we need 24 new ones, 24 more partners for the year 2025. Okay, six reasons why Elijah's prophecy in Malachi 4:5 is future. And what I mean by it's future, that is, Malachi's prophecy has not been fulfilled yet. It wasn't fulfilled in the first coming of Christ, which many amillennialists believe. So Malachi 4:5 reads, "Look, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the great and terrible day of the Lord arrives." So it's the person of Elijah. It's not a type that fulfills it. I mean, you can have types, and we're going to see that John the Baptist clearly is a type of Elijah. And again, there's no reason where you interpret the Old Testament by the New Testament. It's actually the other way around, because God ordained for there to be Genesis 1:1 to be the first chapter of the Bible, not at the last chapter in the Bible. It's not the other way around. So you have to be very careful with a deductive theological system, takes New Testament passages and imposes it on the Old Testament. And this is a perfect example. And let me explain. There's good reasons why Reformed / Covenant theology reinterprets Malachi 4:5 from its original intended meaning. That is, the original audience of Malachi would have thought of no other person than Elijah the prophet is the person in which that prophecy would be fulfilled. So, six reasons. Number one, the original context intends a link between the person of Elijah and the great and terrible day of the Lord arrives, Malachi 4:5. So, This is an important point, but it's almost without exception. Whenever there's amillennial interpretation of Malachi 4:5, they always, again, there's, you know, almost without exception, they leave out this important clause where the statement of the great and terrible day of the Lord arrives. They just kind of focus on the person of Elijah, or as they would see it, John the Baptist being interpreted. But if you look at the actual language, both the Old Testament and the New Testament, they establish this, quote, terrible day event, not at Christ's first coming, but as God's eschatological wrath at the consummation. Again, not at his first coming. The terrible day is not the first coming of Christ. The terrible day is when Jesus returns and pours out his universal judgment upon the wicked. Amillennialists virtually ignore that point. And here's another point under point number one. The wording of, quote, before, it creates a precursor link. So, in other words, by reading the Bible backwards, Reformed theology disconnects the original meaning of Malachi 4:5 from God's ordained precursor, quote unquote, before of God, Elijah's warning of impending judgment upon the earth. So the message here in Malachi 4:5 is like, look, Elijah's going to have a special role in at being a precursor for, of course, prophesying judgment upon the wicked. And and again, before the terrible day of the Lord arrives. All right, number two, the transfiguration. Okay, in for example, in Matthew 16, the transfiguration links Christ's future coming in glory with Elijah. So the transfiguration, right? This is a preview of Jesus's future parousia. This transfiguration, and who is linked with the parousia, the future second coming of Christ? Elijah, right? And number three is, and this is most important of all 6 points, I believe. Most important is that Jesus's unequivocal answer to his disciples' question about Elijah's prophecy in Malachi 4:5, where Jesus says, this is his answer, he says, well, Elijah is coming and will restore all things. Now, note that when Jesus answers this, when he makes this statement, John the Baptist is already dead, past tense. He's dead. And yet, Jesus is speaking in the future tense, or more linguistically, in Greek grammar, it would be called the mood of expectation. And then Jesus says, but I tell you that Elijah has already come. Now, has Jesus contradicted himself? Should the interpreter ignore the first or second statement of his theological choosing? You see, there's no need. There's no need to make a choice here, because the natural, it's both. The natural reading is that Jesus is affirming the original meaning of Malachi 4:5, that Elijah himself, he's going to return as a precursor to Jesus's second parousia to judge the world. And at the same time, Jesus then, with his other statement, he's indicating that John the Baptist functioned as a type of precursor to his first parousia, at Christ's first coming. And just, you can cross-reference that as well in Luke chapter 1, verse 17, and Matthew chapter 11, verses 13 to 14, where we see that John the Baptist is a type of Elijah. But again, being the type of something does not, in the hermeneutical framework of amillennialists, it's like either or for them. That's the disjunctive fallacy. It's not either or. Having a type does not negate an actual, real, original meaning of its fulfillment. Okay, number four. In John, we are told that when the Jewish leaders asked John the Baptist if he were the Elijah to come, John answered in the exclamatory negative, quote, so they asked him, then who are you? Are you Elijah? He said, I am not. Are you the prophet? He answered, no. That's John 1:21. So the natural way to understand Elijah has already come, but has not already come, is to view it with Jesus' two-phase coming. John the Baptist came in the spirit and power of Elijah at Christ's first coming, but the real literal fulfillment of Elijah will unfold in proximity to Christ's second coming as a sign to the day of the Lord's wrath, Malachi 4:5. Okay, number five. Now, interestingly, Elijah never died. Remember, he was caught up in the whirlwind in the Old Testament. So Elijah never died. Now, what does that mean? Well, it could suggest an aspect of the purpose for why Elijah is coming in the future. Just throwing that out there. But I find it very interesting that Elijah never died. In other words, it's maybe God has another purpose for him. I believe it is to come back. Now, of course, Elijah could die or could have died in the Old Testament, and Jesus, you know, and God very well could have, in his sovereignty, have Elijah come back, maybe in his, you know, in a different state than he was or is. But nevertheless, Elijah never died. So I find that very interesting. Okay, number six, the last one. One of the two witnesses in the book of Revelation functions eerily, very similar to Elijah. The powers granted to these witnesses are described in Revelation chapter 11, verse 6. Quote, "These two have the power to close up the sky so that it does not rain during the time they are prophesying." And you can cross-reference 1 Kings 17:1 and James 5:17. And there's also other aspects I probably could get into as well that are very similar to the prophet Elijah. So in summary, I think a lot of Reformed tradition makes the mistake, the same mistake. Think about this. They make the same mistake as Jesus' disciples by construing an over-realized eschatology, not realizing God has reserved many divine purposes to be realized in association with his future son's parousia. I think a good example of that could be the many references in the Bible, including the New Testament, to the fulfillment of the Davidic throne, which is always referenced for the future, linked to the future parousia consummation. Just too many times, Reformed interpreters, they deductively rule out predictive prophecies of Jesus's future parousia. And the Elijah prophecy, as we have seen here, is a good example. So for any amillennialists out there who are listening to this, you know, you may not agree here, but I just want you to understand that this is an alternative exegetical interpretation. And so we should always encourage engagement with other interpretations, lest we continue only to hear what our theological traditions have told us what we should believe.